Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
So I'm going to start with an email, surprisingly, this week.
Wow.
I actually haven't done it in a while. Before, so this one's from Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hello, Corey, Luke, and James. My name is Corey.
I just Corey? Wanted to,
yeah.
Corey.
Corey. C-O-R-E-Y.
Oh, like the American football man name. It just sounds like the kind of name that like an American football player at a high school would have. Hey, I'm Corey.
Not after high school. As soon as they leave high school, they change their name. Hey, Corey, Luke, and James. I just wanted to say thank you for entertaining me while I'm in hospital recovering from blood poisoning.
Oh, wow.
Oh, lovely.
We should do an episode on blood poisoning for her.
I was thinking about that. What? Would we really want to bring that back up?
Yeah, no. Let's just remind Anna.
Just as she's checked out, she looks down at her phone and says, sorry, guys, I've uploaded a new episode.
That would be so cruel. Imagine being in hospital suffering from blood poisoning. You're like, I found this podcast to distract me from all my troubles.
Oh
a new episode, blood poisoning.
I should have read ahead. Anna then goes on to say, it might be a fun and potentially life-saving episode of the podcast.
Well, then don't make fun of it quite as much as you did, guys.
Okay.
This is the only podcast I can listen to right now, and I don't feel guilty about wasting my time with it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for wasting your time with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for wasting, wasting your time with us.
Well, Anna, I hope you get better soon.
I'm looking forward to what episode themes you can come up with in future, Anna. And she sent it from her Android phone.
Is that relevant?
No, it just says she sent it from an Android.
Is that our first Android?
Well, Anna, from all of the Sci Guys, I hope you get better soon and carry on listening to the podcast. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And we'll start the show just for you.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Champ and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Bonjour.
This week, we'll be talking about rat utopias and a paradise for mice.
Oh. Rat utopia.
Question. Is rat utopia and paradise for mice the same thing, or do they have different needs?
They're largely the same.
Okay.
Just one has rats and the other has mice.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Also, another question. I was wondering this recently. I'm already doing it. We just started the show and I'm already going off topic.
I already have a thought.
I was wondering, like, so say, for example, take an animal like a cat, right?
Yes. Is this because you were just cuddling with a cat?
No, it's because I was thinking too much. Imagine you take like a cat, right, which eats mice. Would cat heaven be rat and mice hell? Because where there's loads of cats and rats, where there's loads of mice and rats for the cats to eat, that would be rat and mice hell. But it's cat heaven.
That's just rat and mice earth.
Yeah, but yeah.
You know what? Yes, it is.
Living in a crowded city like London, New York, or Beijing can be difficult and sometimes stressful. But is it actually dangerous for society? John Calhoun set out to find the answer to this question, and all he needed was four rats and his neighbor's back garden. This is the study of the behavioral sink.
Dun 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 dun. Did he turn his neighbor's back garden into a rat and mice heaven?
Well, yeah, he turned it into a big rat enclosure, effectively.
Cool.
Yeah. So who is J.B. Calhoun?
I don't know.
Well, I'm about to tell you who.
Justin Bieber. Calhoun.
John Bumpass Calhoun.
Bumpass?
No, you're making that up.
Bumpass.
Bumpass.
B-U-M-P-A-S-S. Bumpass.
Brilliant.
What parents in 1917 would choose Bumpass as a middle name?
That's not his last name.
No, that's his middle name.
That's a name someone chose to give him.
Full-on parents were like, John Bumpass Calhoun. I'm naming my son after what he's going to do.
Bumpass.
In 1954, he joined the section on perception in the Laboratory of Psychology at the National Institute of Medical Health.
Everything you're saying today is ridiculous.
Sounds fake.
He called this, what was it?
The section on perception.
The section on perception, and then the next one, laboratory.
Laboratory of Psychology.
Right, okay.
The National Institute of Mental Health.
Okay.
This sounds like something that would be in a film.
Or a rap.
Just... It was in a film. Maybe. Oh, was it? We'll find out at the end. That's okay. Literally the last thing I'm going to mention.
Okay.
Yeah, he spent the rest of his career there. And then he retired from the National Institute of Mental Health in 1984, but continued to work on his research until he died in 1995.
Oh,
just sad. In his friend's back garden instead of in a laboratory.
He actually started in his friend's back garden.
Oh.
Yeah. So in 1947, John Bumpass Calhoun's neighbor agreed to let him build a rat enclosure on some disused woodland behind his house in Maryland. When he was thinking back on it, he realized his neighbor probably didn't know how big the enclosure he was going to build was.
How big was it?
Well, he said that his neighbor probably thought it was a Hugh Hutches. And a small run. But what he actually built was a quarter acre pen.
Wow. For four rats.
Whoa.
Which, well, that's the thing. Rats can breed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sexy rats.
No.
Why do you say things? Sexy rats.
Honestly, a podcast was not the best idea. There were five pregnant females in there. Obviously, they gave birth. And then they had more rats after that. And the population grew. So the habitat was big enough to accommodate about 5,000 rats in total. But the population leveled off at 150.
Sad.
Yeah.
Why? Huh.
Well, we'll find out, won't we, Luke?
I suppose they couldn't... When would inbreeding set in?
Oh, they're rats, so it was fine.
Okay.
They don't care.
Yeah, man.
Weird.
This is the thing. He starts off with really small numbers of rats. Like, 8 in one case. In this case, it's, 10. Well, not 10, actually, because there's lots of rats inside the pregnant female. So he obviously starts off with a very small number of rats, and then it exponentially just explodes. They don't really care about inbreeding, apparently. They're quite good at it.
I don't think rats would. No.
No, they really don't. My rats try and mate with each other, and they're all boys and brothers. So
nothing wrong with that, Corey. Oh, well, the brothers bit.
Well,
maybe,
I mean,
yes.
Look.
The brothers bit, we'll take issue with that bit.
So he studied them over 2 years, and... Yeah, they didn't get above 150, which was odd.
Isn't that the upper limit, according to Noel Harari? Not what's his name?
He write Sapiens?
Yeah, he wrote Sapiens, whereby a culture can't survive on gossip anymore and has to have some kind of external government. So maybe the rats just couldn't implement an external government. Just like our government.
Oh.
And that's why they stopped at 150. Some of them maybe moved to Europe.
None of the rats moved to Europe.
Because of Brexit, yeah.
Nor was there any other
visa.
So the maximum was never reached, but 5,000 rats would have been really tight. That would have given them about 2,000 square centimeters each. I'm trying to watch you try and conceptualize that. It's not very big.
No.
yeah, so he published his study, but...
What was the study in for?
For rats?
What?
A study of rats.
Population dynamics. So effectively, he thought that a population of 150 seemed quite odd, given that 5,000 could fit in there. And he came up with the concept of the behavioral sink, which is the collapse of an overpopulated society.
Ah. Because they couldn't gossip anymore.
It's not about gossip. We'll get into what it's about.
You don't know that. Rats could gossip, man. You don't know. Bees dance to tell each other where nice flowers are.
See, this is anthropomorphizing animals, isn't it?
It is hypothesizing.
Just using another however many syllable word.
Learn how to count, and then you can come out with scientific explanations for things.
So he did some more experiments with rats in cages. Big cages.
Just basically a summary of all science?
Yeah, mostly. No, he did more experiments with these kind of rats in really big enclosures. And it piqued the interest of the National Institute of Mental Health.
For what purpose?
Why?
For studying mental health, of course. So they invited him to come over and work with them from 1954 onwards, which was very good for him because he managed to set up a lot of experiments
with rats.
Wow, that's the thing.
Wow.
I was going to say, what can rats solve with mental health?
Lots of things.
Rats use serotonin.
I wrote an entire paper on rats and depression.
And eating poo.
Well, that was part of it, yes. I don't know why that's the part that everyone harps on. It was a very small section.
But a minute factor.
Yeah, so rats are actually a good model organism for humans in a lot of cases because we know a lot about rats, which is why we can use them for diabetes or obesity. Ooh. Or depression.
Fat rats.
We've made a lot of rats depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sad. It is. Well, they are.
Aren't they? They are sad.
Do rats have depression naturally? Ever? Or not?
I mean, not naturally necessarily. I mean, I think it's hard to be depressed when you're surviving.
When you're really cute. What?
No, because you're still...
And can make little squeaks.
Because you're still depressed, Luke, aren't you?
I'm cute and can make little squeaks.
I don't think rats look at themselves and go, oh, I'm so cute, my squeaking. Yeah.
I think they do look cute.
I just can't be depressed with my cute squeaking.
No, but if you think about it, it's difficult to be depressed when you're in survival mode.
And you don't have a sense of self, yeah.
But I mean, even humans, you can't really... If you're focused on surviving, just getting day to day, it's not really easy to be depressed, is it?
Yeah,
you were talking about that, weren't you, at one point with with villages, little villages that haven't really met other people.
Well, that's not that. What I was talking about there was I was reading a book called The Cosmic Serpent, where an anthropologist. What?
I just love the title of that book. Sorry, yeah. Serpent.
An anthropologist went out to a bunch of tribes, and it wasn't because they were in survival mode. He basically, as an anthropologist, he was taught to try and find things that, because he's from like a Western society and these are like Amazonian tribes people, he has to try and find something that they can like bond over, something they both understand in both cultures. And so he decides to share the story of his mother's suicide. And he finishes his story and everyone just starts laughing. And he's like, why are you laughing at this horrible story? And they said, we just don't understand why anyone would ever kill themselves. And they were like laughing about that because it was like such a bizarre,
so ridiculous
concept to them. And he also did a bunch of studies on like their average happiness rated from negative 100 to positive 100. And their average happiness was positive 70.
Whoa.
Right. And it was just because they didn't supposedly, they don't have external concepts of self-worth. And they just get what they get from the land. They have religion based on the land gives them, provides for them. And the conclusion he was drawing was that so much of what we call depression and mental health conditions come from the society we live in rather than being inherent to human existence or human condition.
That's really interesting. That might be related a little bit to what we're talking
about.
Is that
what the episode's about?
Yeah.
Helpful. That is an interesting point, though. That a lot of things we see as being very human probably just come from us living in a really weird way.
Yeah, because we have so many beliefs about things that will make us happy. For example, having money, having status, having items of ownership, like having a relationship. And none of those things are actually things that bring you lasting happiness because then once you have them, you're just scared that they're going to go.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't actually work. And they don't have concepts like that. They don't have external sense of self.
I think it went wrong. Well, we went wrong as a human race when we started farming. Let's just go back to before then.
Okay.
When we were hunting and gathering.
Yes.
No one needs to be vegan because you just kill an animal and eat it. Good. Let's do that.
No factory
farming. Let's us three run off.
Yeah.
What would we hunt? Squirrels?
Yeah. We couldn't hunt, man.
I could hunt, man.
What, me and James?
I could pretty confidently hunt both of you.
You could probably hunt us, yeah.
I mean, you'd probably offer yourself up to me.
What?
I don't want to fight.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'm too ethical.
I welcome death. Take my body.
If you must.
Finally.
Will it really make you happy, Corey, to kill and eat me? It would. I'm going to tell you about Universe 25.
Universe 25.
Like Rat Universe 25?
Mouse Universe 25.
Oh, my mistake.
He switched from rats to mice.
Hang on, so he basically believes he's playing God here. Because he's like, I have made a universe for my rats and mice.
I don't think he thinks he was playing God. I think
he was playing God.
Well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, science is just playing God, isn't it?
He was God.
Yeah. Or staring God in the face and saying, ha, I can do it better.
Sure.
We make glow-in-the-dark cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the goal was to see if a perfect society would flourish from a wealth of resources. Spoiler alert, it didn't.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, no.
That's Western democracy completely screwed then?
Basically, yeah. So a tank of 101 inches square, enclosed by walls 54 inches high, the first 37 inches of which were structured so that the mice could climb up, but then they were prevented from escaping by the further 17 inches of bare wall above. And each wall had 16 vertical mesh tunnels. He called them stairwells. Soldered.
I
hate that word.
Both are fine.
Yeah, soldered to it. Four horizontal corridors opened off each stairwell, each leading to four nesting boxes. This means 256 boxes in total, each capable of housing 15 mice. So, effectively, you could have 3,850 mice.
How many did he get to?
A lot more than 150.
That's a spoiler, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, there's enough space for 3,850 mice. He gave them food, he gave them water, unlimited bedding. There was just a lot of space to, you know, have kids, eat.
They were chilling.
Yeah, they could have been. They could have been.
What really happened?
Bad things. So he started off with four breeding pairs, four males and four females. And the population started to double every 50 days, which was to be expected, which is amazing. I would have thought.
I was going to say that is quick.
Yeah, rats really, you got to separate them when they're like a few weeks old. Otherwise, they just start going at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was after day 315 that things started to really go wrong.
Oh no, was there a civil war?
No. A civil war of sorts.
Wow.
Yes, a mouse civil war. So there was a noticeable drop in population growth. Instead of doubling every 50 days, it started doubling every 145 days. Which is weird because about 3,000 more mice could have fit into that space.
Yeah, but it's
slowing
down.
They just didn't. Yeah, it started to slow down. But that wasn't all.
Why did it slow down?
Well, you see, the thing is, they started breeding more slowly, but there were also social impacts as well. So I'll just run you through all of the stuff that went down. The male mice, who had no territory to defend and had enough food and water, didn't have to defend that, just stopped trying to fight each other in terms of defending territory. And they formed like cliques.
Ooh.
And just kind of started randomly attacking each other in small groups.
Wait, so they were no longer attacking each other over territory, they would just attack each other over nothing.
Yeah.
So there was
instead of an individual mouse so protecting its territory and its food.
Oh, gangs.
Yeah, little
they
gangs.
They were forming gangs then having gang wars.
And they called each other by their postcodes.
Like, actually though, there is a lot of anthropomorphization going on with this sort of study.
But also they are exhibiting things that we exhibit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is there. I mean, you could take it however you want, but it is all there. They are forming gangs and just going around and killing each other. That's just the males, though. The females did a little bit different. They just stopped caring for their young. And yeah.
Sometimes. I was going to say, did they become really empathetic? No, they did not.
No.
They became quite the opposite.
Yeah. Sometimes they'd attack the young.
Oh.
Right.
Was there any theory as to why they were doing that? Were they not sure which ones were theirs anymore?
Probably just bored.
Right.
Or it doesn't really matter. You need to
screw
survive.
This one. I'll start over.
The thing is, they weren't even eating them at this point, because obviously with rodents, they can sometimes eat the babies if you get pregnant.
Right.
A mouse can't have an abortion. So
they just birth it and then
eat it. They birth it and eat it and then they get the resources back, mostly. But yeah, they weren't doing that. No, they were just attacking them for no apparent reason. And then the males and females just stopped mating altogether at one point.
Right.
Yeah, they just weren't interested, really. Some males became exclusively homosexual.
Cool.
Yeah, they would just, you know, just have sex with each other all the time, which was really nice for them, obviously. Kind of useless in keeping the population alive. And others became pansexual. And this is not, this does not reflect all pansexuals, but they would have sex with literally any mouse they came into contact with.
Ah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't care what bits
you
got.
You can't really call that necessarily pansexual, because you don't know that the mouse is like, I don't see gender and I just see mice.
Well, the mouse did just see mice.
What you're describing is the mice just were like horny for anything. They didn't really discriminate by gender.
Well, the not discriminating by gender part is pansexual.
The scientist found a small blackboard with the words, any hole's a goal. Inscribed.
No.
But yeah, just in kind of comparison to the gay mice, these mice were kind of doing the same thing, but with anyone they could get their little mousy hands on.
I'm assuming this is the male mice only, or were the female mice also being like female on... Were they being pansexual as
were
well?
Were they being female?
Were they being
the female mice? There were no trans mice, pansexual. Luke. No.
Were they being female pansexual?
Maybe there are trans mice.
Were they being... I'm trying to ask this question in the most delicate possible way. Were they being female pansexual?
As far as I'm aware, they were not.
Okay.
Do tell, what is the difference between pansexual and female pansexual?
Well, what I mean is that, like... were the female mice like trying to mate with each other when there was nothing there to mate with? Does that make sense? Because like the male mice, right? Were the female mice?
That's
what I was trying to say in the most delicate way possible. Were the female mice scissoring? Because you didn't specify which sex was being pansexual.
I did say that it was the males.
Oh, did you? Well, I was too busy imagining female mice scissoring, so I'm sorry.
You really should be sorry.
The men were either having sex with men or anyone. What were the females doing then?
Oh, just chilling.
Just chilling.
Yeah.
Killing their babies.
Yeah, killing the babies.
Yeah, fine.
But that's the thing. They weren't just...
I suppose that means that if the females were killing the babies and also not wanting to mate with the males, I assume that some sort of circuitry in the female brain was triggering some sort of overpopulation response, going, there are too many mice, kill the babies and don't mate with the males.
But there wasn't an overpopulation.
No, but could it be possible that they perceived there to be an overpopulation?
It could be. The thing is... I'll get into like what they actually saw from it later, but kind of,
right.
It
sounds like that triggering would explain both of those separate phenomenon occurring, killing babies and not mating with males.
Well, yeah, the thing is, they weren't necessarily killing the babies. They were just attacking them every now and then. They didn't really get to the killing at that point.
Okay.
But what happened next was
just like slapping them up a bit.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. So they started attacking each other randomly and also just killing each other. Beforehand, they weren't being super like that aggressive, but all mice just started randomly killing each other with no real reason. Eventually, some mice started just eating each other. There was a lot of food still.
Healthy.
Bear in mind, they were being given like fresh food, I think almost daily.
That's super weird.
It's basically unlimited, but they started eating each other. Yeah.
I don't understand why, though.
Have they gone, like, linking into the fact that this is eventually leading to mental health stuff?
Yeah.
Is this
like a, like, mouse psychosis or something?
Yeah. Yeah, effectively, it is described as psychosis. Psychosis and brought on by this kind of increased population.
What do they think triggered the psychosis in the mice?
The population increase.
What?
Yeah.
But why?
That's so strange.
Yeah, it gets stranger. So not only were they eating each other, mothers were just abandoning their young.
Sure.
So not even attacking them or trying to raise them.
Yeah.
They were just straight up.
Oh, they stopped eating them.
They just left them. They didn't let them die. They didn't care. Yeah. So they were grouping together in about groups of up to 50, some of the mice, in pens made for 15.
How many were there by this point in total?
About 600.
Wow.
So they're only at like 20% capacity or so?
Oh, yeah, this is the key thing about this experiment. This time that he ran it, it didn't cap out at 150 mice.
Yeah, but it was much larger.
Right. The pen was smaller.
That was rats the first time.
Okay.
This is mice.
Mice is different.
And the difference here is also that they've got unlimited food.
I mean, they kind of had that beforehand.
Okay, fine.
So this is the same. This is just kind of very purpose-built for the mice to have pretty much everything that they need. And also they're different animals, so you could expect it to be different levels. So mice were grouping together in groups of 50 into pens made for 15, despite the fact that there were empty pens inches away.
So strange.
Whoa. It's really strange, right? So they were like packed in. Imagine a room full of about 50 people in here.
In James's bedroom, in my room
right now, but 50 people, and we're like, oh, this is awful.
Yeah,
but we're not going to go out.
There's an empty room right there. Well, we're not going to
No.
I'm staying in this room, but all of you can get out.
Yeah, and the empty pens were full of bedding and everything, so there was There was no difference between them. They just were staying in groups of 50.
They just preferred to be with other mice.
Kind of,
even though they didn't really want to be with other mice.
Yeah, they did not like it. They were just
right.
They were really not making much sense, except for some mice, the beautiful ones, as they were dubbed. Yeah, so that was a small set that just removed themselves from the rest of society quite early on.
And they were beautiful?
They were beautiful.
Were they like especially nice mice?
How do we know they were beautiful?
Well, that's the thing. They moved to the upper levels of the enclosure, and all they did was sleep, eat, and groom each other.
Sexy mice.
Sexy mice, as there I said. Sexy mice.
Yes, but they didn't do the sex.
Right.
Yeah, no, they weren't.
So they were asexual.
I still don't understand what makes them beautiful mice.
Well, because they only slept, ate, and groomed each other, they just looked really good. Their coats were nice and shiny. Compared
so they
to the
were
other
like
mice.
The royalty.
Well, yes,
kind
I suppose.
Of.
Yeah.
Queen bee.
Did the other mice, the ones that are stuffed into the small enclosures, did they eventually form like a Marxist revolution?
They did not, though. They just left them. So the ones that went up high just avoided...
Overthrow the monarchy!
Well, do you know what? The thing is, they're not so much the monarchy, because they just left society. They were like, this isn't for us.
Like the hippies.
Yeah, they're hippies. They're not hippies.
Nice.
But also, because they weren't constantly warring with other mice, they didn't have any scars either. So they were like really good-looking mice. These were like pretty mice.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So
they were the untouchables.
Basically. And they were very well-fed as well, obviously. There was no real explanation for that. They just kind of left and formed a nice sort of elfin society where they didn't have sex. Again, for some reason, that was quite odd.
I suppose they don't need to. There's already loads of mice.
That's not really how animals tend to work.
I don't know.
That's maybe. Never really stopped them before. Like, do you think we should have sex? There's quite a few... Quite a few mice over here.
Oh, I would have sex, darling, but look at all those other mice.
We just had so many children.
I don't want to contribute to that.
I don't want to raise babies in a wood like this.
Is that why they abandoned them?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to raise them.
Oh, they made them, but they won't raise them.
There was a population decline, obviously, because if you're not having sex, you're not having babies. And if you're not having babies...
And you're eating all your friends.
And mice are dying.
If all of that happens, then your population goes down.
As the old adage goes, if you're not having sex and you're eating all your friends, the population will go down.
I think it was saying. It's so beautiful.
Freud that said that.
No, Plato, I believe.
Oh, Plato, yes. And they were around at much the same time, so it's easy to get confused.
Confucius says.
Confucius. So the last birth was on day 600.
Wow, this guy was committed to his weird experiment.
That's going on two years nearly.
Yeah, most of his experiments lasted over a few months. I mean, the first rat one I was speaking about was about 2 years as well. He spent, I think, more than a decade of his life just doing rat experiments and mouse experiments.
This was for the mental health institution at this point?
This time it was, yeah. Right. But beforehand it wasn't. Okay. He was just kind of doing it.
And what were they hoping to discover by this horrible experiment?
This is just one of those things where you just do it.
Where it's just like,
what?
It's just like, whatever.
Well, so he'd already kind of come up with the concept of the behavioral sink. And so the rest of his experiments were trying to understand why that happens.
Right. I suppose then you could use this, you could extrapolate out the information and suggest that it works in humans. You could observe a similar effect in humans. And then when you have densely populated cities and people are living in what you would consider objectively to be horrible conditions, but they seem perfectly happy in them, and then you have a set few people living in riches and just grooming each other and not having sex, then that's the same thing as is happening here.
It's weird how much it applies to humans.
Yeah,
they are the celebrities.
They are the celebrities.
Little celebrity mice. Like, I want to be a celebrity.
Do they have a science podcast?
What if there's three little mice that have a little sign? Oh, that'd be amazing. So even once the population dropped back down to normal levels, they didn't start having sex again. Nothing went back to normal. Once that switch had been flipped, the mice were crazy.
Endless chaos.
For good. And after a few months, all the mice died. Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, they don't live that long. So from day 600,
if they're not breeding.
You're not breeding. That population is not going to last very long.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and the thing is, these mice were bred from top stock. They were the National Institute of Mental Health's kind of top mice.
Wow.
And they bred them specifically to be used in this experiment. So they were really healthy. There wasn't really any disease in them or genetic issues. They just broke down. So the best mice broke down.
That's super interesting.
Yeah. So Calhoun described the first death of the mice as being on day 315. Their spirit has died, the first death. They are no longer capable of executing the most complex behaviors compatible with species survival. The species in such settings die.
That's so sad.
Oh. Yeah. Which is effectively, as soon as they stopped breeding properly, that was it. Yeah, you can expect them to live after that. They basically signed their own death sentence.
Yeah.
And we're just waiting around.
Carried on for a year after that.
Oh, yeah, just waiting around for the entire population to just decline and go. But that wasn't his final experiment. He continued to adjust variables and find ways of stopping this behavioral sink, which is why he did more experiments. Because obviously, if this translates to humans, you don't want to just know that society is going to crumble if you get to a certain point. You want to figure out how to stop it.
Yeah, why it's doing it and how to prevent it.
Exactly. Yes. So, in some cases, in his early experiments, he noticed that that some of his rats performed creative acts, and he related this to the discovery of the wheel by man.
What were they creating?
YouTube videos.
The little mice. I was vlogging. Squeak, squeak.
I gave 100 acorns to random people on the street. Here are their reactions.
Living off one acorn a day.
It's probably quite a lot for a rat, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
So Calhoun was quite a... He wasn't like most scientists. He was quite... He had a flourish with the way he described things. Obviously describing this as like discovering the wheel. All the mice were really doing was when they were building a burrow, they were rolling up all the dirt into a ball as opposed to just digging it.
Why?
Right.
They just did it. They were exclusively homosexual though.
It's nice. Just a side note.
So the rats that were doing the rolling... So this is back to the rats. The rats that were doing the rolling were exclusively gay rats.
Wow. That's a weird correlation.
Yeah, so...
What, does that mean they're, like, more house proud or something? They want to tidy?
See, this is applying human stuff to rats. I don't think it was quite that. Effectively, well, rats are smart. Okay, I have rats. I think I've mentioned it before. They're really smart, and they get really bored just not doing anything. So rolling something into a ball is...
playtime.
It's probably them just playing.
Okay.
They do enjoy playing.
Nice.
They're very nice. So,
but only the gay ones like playing.
Only the gay.
The straight ones are like playing is for hetties.
No, it's not for hetties. No,
playing is for the gays.
Ew, I'm not gonna play.
I'm going
gay.
To go and lift weights.
There was this guy at my gym, right, who is the most heterosexual person I have ever seen.
You mean like the most macho?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
As in, he's trying to prove it to everyone. So he stares at himself in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
That's not very heterosexual.
That's what I was thinking.
He is gay, but exclusively for himself.
Oh, that's a really hot man.
But he stares at himself in the mirror and he looks like he's about to try and fight himself. Every single time he's lifting weights, he's like, shouting louder than anyone in the gym.
What are you looking at?
Exactly. Yeah. But literally, and then when he's like done, his set, he'll square up. And he'll walk around looking in every mirror in the room.
Wow.
Single one. He is so loud. I don't think he has any friends.
And they saw this behavior in the rats too.
Sure. when those gym rats were...
There's always that one rat looking at himself in the mirror.
Look, some rats were rolling up balls when they dug their burrows. Those were gay rats and they weren't popular rats. They were on the outskirts of society.
Okay.
They were the loser rats.
Sounds like high school.
It is kind
it
of like,
a lot like high school, doesn't it?
So Calhoun described it as the repression that they'd suffered at the hands of their superiors had resulted in a deviant, creative, and thus adaptive behavior.
Sounds like out of a history book.
Yeah, this guy is like, I love him. He's probably my favorite scientist because he just describes things in such a silly way.
Yeah.
So
although you don't want to anthropomorphize, that does sound like my time in secondary school where like, I was like felt rejected by the majority of people and felt that the traditional structures of hierarchy in the school didn't serve me. And I then naturally moved towards creative outlets like being a YouTuber or making films, things like that. Mm. And I think that's I see that. I don't see a lot of people, or at least in my experience of being in school, a lot of the people for whom the traditional hierarchy structures do work aren't then drawn to creative things. They're drawn to stuff that the hierarchy is good for.
Mm. Well, they don't need to be creative.
Exactly.
Because so they don't...
The rats are displaying that
people
behavior.
Create things for them.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And high school is a lot like this kind of scenario where you're locked in somewhere with a bunch of people that you don't want to be with. And yeah.
It's generally very crowded. To you.
Yeah, high school is awful.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember eating my babies in high school.
High school gang wars.
I'm just picturing you drinking your own semen in it. That's honestly...
No!
So he tried to make more creative mice by conditioning them so that they could, like, you know, destroy themselves.
Well, oh, not be gay.
Be gay and do crimes. No, so they could not destroy themselves when the population got too big. And it kind of worked. Creative mice were less likely to completely destroy society, which is good to know.
That's super interesting as well, because isn't one of the prevailing theories on why the evolution of homosexuality occurred is in order that, what, James, you were telling me about this, I think. I think it was in order that you have males in the society for the evolution of male homosexuality, for example. I believe one theory was that you then have males in the society who have a sexual outlet that doesn't create more babies, and those males can then be male figures in the lives of the offspring without them being their own offspring.
I get, like, that is a nice idea, but I feel like when people talk about that, they forget that evolution isn't a case of, oh, what is the best way to deal with this problem?
Sure, it was more like why it was selected for.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. The thing is, homosexuality is an odd one because it's very difficult to select for, because they tend not to pass on their genes.
They don't breed.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So as I've shown, it's quite important to mention that this behavioral sink isn't inevitable. It just, with the rats, it became a thing mostly because they were kind of eating around each other, which was an issue. Apparently they got really socially confused.
Right.
And stressed out just by this crowding.
Okay.
Which is what the issue was. They discovered that crowding is the issue. It's not population size or population density. It's the idea of crowding, as in social contact.
It's like when...
Right, okay.
Like when ants, for example, they can tell... If you're like a certain type of worker ant, every time you meet another worker ant, you bump faces together and you trade a bit of information on which type of worker ant you are. And every ant stores that information and they have a map of the amount of each type of ant, and then if they determine there to be a lower amount of a certain type of ant, they have a probability of switching to be Ooh. That type of ant. And so I suppose that maybe what could be happening here, I guess, is what you're trying to explain, is that if when the rats go to feed at a feeding point in the cage in the universe, there's a lot of other rats there, then they erroneously take that to mean that there is a crowding, like a large crowding of population.
Yeah, there's a really high demand for the food source.
I think it's not that so much as rats are social animals. If you have a rat, you can't have just one. So it's the fact that there are so many rats there together and they're always eating together that it becomes this kind of social pressure. Rather than, oh, there are too many rats, we need to destroy the society.
It's too much. Too social.
Oh, I'm really stressed. I have anxiety now.
Right.
And then okay. Society collapses.
They're worried that the food source might be eaten up before they get there.
I think you're putting too much on it. Right. It's just social stress. The thing is, with animals, there's not always a, oh, I'm worried that the food is going to go. Or ants are very simple creatures that make up really complex kind of societies. Mm. Whereas mammals are more complex creatures that make up complex societies.
Right.
So trying to come up with a reason for any one group doing something, it's never the one that you think. Because it's...
Yeah. I suppose what I'm getting at is that the rat, in its subjective experience of the world, okay, it's presented with data. Like, for example, I go for food and there is a lot of people there and I get an anxiety feeling. Right, which just comes from, there's no reason for the anxiety feeling. It's just triggered by some genome thing, some piece of code. There's no necessarily any reason. It's just that it's been selected for that when it's crowded at food time, you get an anxiety response.
It's just, I think it's overstimulation.
And so what I'm trying to do there is to go, okay, if the rat has any subjective experience, like we have subjective experience, what would the feeling I would feel in that situation be?
Right.
So like, if you, for example, if someone like bumps into you, you get an automatic feeling response of that person deliberately bumped into me, and you get this angry feeling, which isn't actually the reason, but you make a story in your head as to why you feel the angry feeling. The angry feeling just exists, and then you give yourself a story as to why you have the
angry
feeling.
To make it make sense, right.
Well, that's what brains do. They just kind of come up with
stories.
They trick you into thinking that
it's got a conclusion.
Whatever story they've made is, real.
Exactly. It's the same thing with like depression. It's like when you're feeling depressed, you will tell yourself stories as to why you are depressed, why you should be depressed, why you deserve to be depressed, who made you depressed, all these things. And actually, you're just depressed. There isn't a reason for it. And you add all the stories on top of it. And so I guess the mistake I'm making is I'm assuming rats also tell themselves stories in their head, which they don't necessarily do.
Well, they could. We don't know.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, which they don't necessarily do.
All I'm saying is that this kind of social pressure, this increased social stress seems to cause them to break down. Which is why changing the feeding strategies so that they're not so crowded when they're feeding actually stopped the society from collapsing.
Oh, that worked?
Oh, yeah, no, that worked. Oh. Yeah, there were a few things that he'd done. Obviously, making creative rats, changing the feeding tactics really, really helped in stopping them from just imploding.
Yeah.
That obviously has some quite bleak connotations for humanity.
Yes.
We live in a quite crowded society. And,
yeah, we live in a society.
We also have homosexuals and...
Unfortunately.
Other such... blights on humanity.
James. You can't leave that without explaining.
I am one. I hate myself.
Calhoun proposed the idea of Dawn's Day, which is the opposite of Doomsday. It's when society becomes
dawn.
Better. Are you guys discussing...
Not Dawn as in the name Dawn.
Dawn.
Right.
Dawn as in D-A-W-N. Oh,
I say Dawn and Dawn the same
dawn.
Way.
Right.
Yeah.
Dawn. D-A-W-N's day.
Yeah, as in dusk and dawn.
Okay.
Fuck. Dawn's day.
Not Donald. Dawn.
Okay.
Not Dawn.
So he said Dawn's day was the day when society gets better.
Yes. He thought all of mankind could become part of a single world brain, consisting of numerous and diverse subsystems, each interlinked to, aware of, and dependent upon the other.
I believe this.
Kind of like the internet. The internet is like a proto... it's like a proto-consciousness. Consciousness? It's like a proto-hive mind.
Yes.
Really. So those were the experiments of Calhoun. If you put a lot of rats or mice in a really large space, they'll just crowd themselves and end up killing each other. Much like humans.
That's a good conclusion.
Yeah. Don't eat your babies. Goodbye.
Well, that's the end of the show. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can find and contact us at SkyGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or send us an email at SkyGuysPod@gmail.com.
SkyGuysPod@gmail.com.
If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on Patreon. And you can find me at NotCorey everywhere.
Find me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can find me at Luke Cupforth everywhere.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.